Hi, today's February 23, 2020. This is Smoking News Podcast number 319. I'm Dado Gasaord, my good friend John Westfall. And this should be a really short podcast. Although I think we've got some interesting stuff to talk about.
And we do always say it's going to be really short, and then it goes on for 6 hours. So
yeah, we've never been that bad.
I can't be sure what it's really going to be. I guess we will find out.
All right. So the first thing I wanted to mention is that recently, just a couple of days ago, February 19th, Microsoft announced that their unified Office app, it was ready for general, or it was generally released for both iOS and Android. Up until then, I think a beta for Android was out. I know I was running the beta for Android. And by beta, I mean, you know, it was available through the Google Play Store, but it wasn't a production release. And I'm not sure what the status was with iOS. But anyway, they're both available now. The thing I would say, only caveat I would say is the iOS release is right now iPhone only. If you try to install it on the iPad, it'll say, hey, you know, we've got, this really isn't for this. Go use some of the individual components. But Microsoft's blog announcement says that it will be available for tablets soon. And I don't know about, I think it said something about Android tablets are okay now, but I don't have any Android tablets to test with. I know it doesn't install in a Chromebook running the, you know, Android compatibility. So, but it is really interesting because I didn't think it was really interesting to begin with, except that, you know, a Word, Excel, and PowerPoint were all in one place. And so I was running on my Android, and it was okay. You know, it was kind of nice to see, and you could see all your files. Or I shouldn't say that. You can see all your document files. But the one thing that I found really interesting with the release of the production ones is maybe because I didn't pay attention to the beta release or the earlier releases, is that there are some new features, or at least they're new to me. And they're slightly different on the Android and iOS apps. John, have you tried it on your iPhone yet?
I did. I downloaded it. I actually tried it on the iPad too and then got the, hey, this isn't for you message. But I find it really interesting, some of these features. Why don't you, you've played around with them, I think, a little longer than I have. So why don't you walk through them and
Maybe an hour longer.
how you feel about them.
I'm really, I have to say, I'm really excited by them. I know that sounds weird, but it's true. So let me start with what's unique to Android, because Android does have a couple of features that it only it has. And it, Android version of the this Unified Office app has two file sharing options that are not available for iOS. One is transfer files, and that shares your files between your phone and your computer. And the other is share nearby, which I assume it does it over Bluetooth or something. So you could, you know, share a file with a nearby phone, presumably Android only. I don't know. I should try it between my two phones, I guess. I've got an Android Pixel 3a and an iPhone 10, so I could try it, 10s, and so I could try it. But what they've got in common is really pretty interesting, especially the image transformation utilities. One is basically OCR, it's image to text. So you can take a picture, and it will extract the text into something that you can toss into Word. I tested it with a bottle of household cleaner label, a label in household cleaner. Because, you know, it's got kind of, you know, like lines and things that I thought might confuse it. But it did a pretty good job of converting that image of the label into text. And I think I should go check again, but I think it was 100% correct. Even though there are different size fonts, if you know what labels look for folks who, you know, can kind of picture what a label looks like on a typical household cleansing product. The other one is even more interesting, and I have tested that previously, and that's image to table. So you can take a picture of essentially like a grid, you know, a table printed on a page, like a textbook or magazine or whatever, and it will turn it into an Excel spreadsheet. This was available earlier in the Excel for Android app. So I've tested that, and that's pretty good, too. I think if you're, you know, John, you can tell me, since you know what students do these days. Do students still carry physical textbooks, or is everything ebooks now? Or is it a mix?
I do not see students carrying textbooks that often. A lot of ebooks, and I think that if they have physical textbooks, they have them at home. They're not using them as their book in class.
Okay.
But yeah, there's a lot more ebook adoption, especially with a lot more platforms now where the ebook comes as part of an integrated learning platform where you're also submitting homework or other assignments based on the book.
Yeah, you know what I was thinking was in the old days, when I was in college, you know, some of the exercises, especially in stats class, they'd have a table of numbers, and you're expected to, to crank them in to either a computer or a calculator and do some, simple statistics, right, for example. And with this image-to-table function, you could just snap a picture of the table and create an Excel spreadsheet and extract all the numbers that way. It'd be, like, way faster.
Very true. And, I even tried that feature in an interesting scenario. So I was at a meeting a few weeks ago, and the presenter was putting up slides with numbers, budget numbers on them. And I took a picture from about 30 feet away, and then I zoomed it in for Excel or for the Office app, and it was able to pull some of the text out. It wasn't great. It wasn't even really what I would say a starting point, but the whole idea that it got me anything was pretty crazy.
Yeah. And so, you can, and again, back in my day, when we wrote on stone tablets with styluses, the problems are all toy problems, right? So there are maybe 10 numbers per array or vector or whatever. And you do your calculations based on that. But I assume these days, in your stats classes, John, do you give full data sets? You don't make kids type them in anymore, do you?
No, I generally don't. I mean, you can just type it. You just copy and paste from the file I sent out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a kinder, gentler world in some respects. So I'm really excited about these two features because, I need to go test it on handwriting, which I have not done yet. I do have a couple of whiteboard screenshots I've taken using Office Lens. And I should say that a lot of this is based on Office Lens. But I haven't really tested to see how well it can capture, especially my scribbles, which are, I can barely read my handwriting. So I'm not sure if Office Lens can. But I found those two the most exciting. The other things that it added, I think, are almost expected, but some are interesting. You can do assign a PDF. I'm not sure how that works. Mm-hmm. I haven't tried that yet. If you need to activate some kind of feature, presumably they need some kind of authentication system, Active Directory or something to authenticate you against it. But sign a PDF, scan.
Sign PDF is literally draw your signature on a PDF.
So it's a wet signature, but dry.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Okay. And scan up to PDF, pictures to PDF. And document a PDF. I assume that's multiple pages, but I have not tested that one. But again, back in the day, I don't know if I ever told you this story, John. So when I was a grad student, I rented a lot, not rented. I was, as a grad student, I was able to reserve a private library, Carol, in the library. Mm-hmm. And as you know, there are some books you cannot check out. And, journals, generally speaking, I don't know about when you're in grad school, but you couldn't check out journals. Journals had to stay in the library. So I bought a cheap copying machine and I put it in my library, Carol, which is locked. So I had my own copier and I could go in there and just copy my heart's content. Now you don't even need to spend that money. You can just, presumably just scan it into your phone and pick up a whole bunch of pages and so forth.
The irony of that is when I was in college, when I was an undergrad, I was in the university's honors program, which one of the benefits was you could get a locked study Carol in the library.
Uh-huh.
Normally you had to be a grad student for that.
Right.
And I actually had a portable scanner. Now, oddly enough, by the time I was there, a lot of my resources were already starting to go online, journals and things like that. Occasionally I'd have to go into the stacks and find something. But the weirder part was I was using it to scan in papers that I was receiving in class, handouts and things like that that I didn't want to have to worry about the physical copy. So I would go back there between classes and sit in my study, Carol, and I would actually, I had a security cable for my laptop, tethered it to the Carol, and I would set up every morning and then tear it out at night and go home. But, it was an interesting time to think about that. Now, you just take out your phone and snap some pictures. Office Lens and even the scanning feature built into the OneNote app, or not OneNote, but OneDrive app are very good.
Yeah, they are pretty good, actually. You know, they deskew and all the kind of things you would want and enhance contrast and all that. I am curious, though. So I assume this was slightly before cloud storage was available. There might have been a couple, but were you subscribing to an early cloud storage service, or were you storing everything locally?
Storing everything locally. I'm trying to, yeah. It was pretty much all local then, because this was before cloud services of any kind.
Yeah, yeah. I remember there used to be, gosh, I can't remember what the name of it was called Z Drive or something like that. I think it was called X Drive. It was the earliest cloud storage service I remember, and I think I paid $10 a month for 100 megabytes of storage in the cloud.
Wow.
I know, right? It's almost laughable now. But back then, it was a big deal, and I thought it was pretty cool to store stuff in the cloud.
Interesting, because that would be something you would not leave anything in the cloud. With 100 megabytes, you're basically using it as transfer it to the cloud, and then when you get home, move it out of the cloud, move it on to wherever you're going to store it.
Yep. Yeah. And what I did leave up there were ASCII text files that were my notes, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, super efficient from a file size point of view, much more efficient than Word, for example. But you know, they had what I needed, right? They had my notes up there, so it was pretty cool. That was
my version of doing this was, if you remember, when the PaperPort software came out originally, and it was bundled with scanners.
Oh yeah, I didn't have one. I remember it.
Yeah, it was originally Visioneer was the company that did it, and you would get a version of it if you bought a scanner. And today, the odd thing is PaperPort is still around. It's just been bought and sold a few times. But that was how I would, you know, scan things, and then I think I had a way to back up my PaperPort database when I would go home or something like that.
Yeah, and I just wanted to mention one final feature. Not too exciting, but it's there, you know. So it's a scan QR code, and they say to use it to open files or links, presumably inside of the Office app. I guess it can capture. Oh, there is one more thing I wanted to note, and that is, in addition to the normal Office apps, there's something called Quick Notes. But the problem with it, at least for me, is I can't figure out where it stores it aside from locally. And so I was hoping I could use it in place of, say, Evernote. But it looks like it only stores it locally. Or if it does, I don't know. Did you find out where it stores it?
Yeah. Mine is synced up to my Exchange server under Notes and Outlook.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. I got to go look on mine now. Okay.
Because that was because actually, when I opened it up, I have four notes in there. I thought, wait a minute, I typed those into Outlook in the notes section.
Yeah.
I just confirmed that if you create a new quick note, it syncs up to your Outlook notes section as well.
Gee, I don't see it. I mean, I checked my Outlook last night, but I don't see it.
Wonder if there's a setting for where the notes should be stored, or
so. You know, are you using Office 365? Personal, I mean not personal, but you know, the consumer version, are you syncing it to your enterprise Office 365 account?
It's the enterprise.
That might be the difference. I'm syncing it to, or you know, I'm using it with my personal Microsoft Office 365 account. And it doesn't appear to have notes. Or if it does, I don't know where it is. I've got a to-do. I've got my day, whatever that is. Nope. That's just like a calendar and things. Got announcements, add Gmail to Outlook. Nope. And whatever this diamond thing is. What's this diamond thing? Yeah. I'll go look. But I do not see notes. I see mail, calendar, and people. And that's it. So maybe you need to be using the enterprise version of Office 365 for notes to synchronize, which is a shame. That would be really nice to have it on my personal account. But in any case, I will continue looking for it. Thanks for that info, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And, the other thing is that I haven't tried this, but this Unified Office app also supports third-party cloud services. So you can use something other than Microsoft OneDrive if you do. By the way, you know, one thing I noticed in the feature to do image to text and so forth, it looks for images on my local photo store, but it doesn't look for it in OneDrive. where I have a bunch of whiteboard, you know, snapshots already stored. So that was a little bit disappointing because that's where one, you know, Office Lens stores it. So I thought it would look there also, but it doesn't seem to. Or maybe it's because I'm using my personal account. Not sure. I'm not using my work account to test.
In any event, I think it's an interesting strategy by Microsoft to try to unify things under one. And so I'm curious to kind of see where it goes. And what I'm really curious to see what they do on iPad, because it seems like the iPad having separate apps was just fine for an iPad that you think of as a desktop replacement. And then even more interesting, what are they planning on unifying the Office apps on PC and Mac? Because that could be very interesting too.
Well, it used to be called Microsoft Works. But
true, very true.
Which is a pretty cool product, I thought. I thought it was underdeveloped. I thought they could have done a lot more with it, and it could have been a lot more interesting and useful. But that's not the way Microsoft chose to go. So you know what I was thinking is, you know, with all these crazy illnesses running around the world, like COVID-19, and perhaps the need for more telework for a lot of people. I was wondering if, you know, this kind of unification of applications, at least on the mobile platform, will make it easier for people to do their work remotely if necessary. So, you know, instead of telling somebody, oh, you know, you need to install this, 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 and this, you can now say, well, you need to install the Outlook app and the Microsoft Office app, and you're kind of done. Mm-hmm. You know, so you simplify sort of the onboarding process for Microsoft Office, at least, and perhaps simplify finding files, although I need to think about that a little bit more. And you know, be able to work remotely with, you know, say, if you have some documentation on paper and they're in tables or they're just, you know, text and you need to quickly get them to the system so you can edit because you can't get into the office and you don't have an office scanner. Having everything in one place, especially for the support people to say, hey, it's all in there. Just go ahead, open it up, and, you know, click on this, and you're good to go. I really think that that's where the power of this will show itself. But we'll find out more. I see. Yeah, I only have one note on mine, so I think it's not synchronizing. Back to the notes thing. Let's see. Okay. I'm trying to see if there's any actions I missed. Nope. Looking at the iPhone. Looking at the Android phone. Oops. I don't know. You have anything else to say about this particular one?
Nope. I'm just curious to see where it goes.
Yep. Absolutely. I think that's about it. But you know, I'm surprisingly excited by it. I didn't think I would be until I kind of opened it up again after a long time of not testing it and saying, "Hey, you know, I really need to think through what this is doing for us."
Mm-hmm.
All righty. And the next thing I have is there's a study from, well, you know, I'm not really sure where this university is. It's a .edu. What is this university? NEU.edu. What is NEU.edu? Northeastern University. So this research piece from Northeastern University about smart speakers is pretty interesting, and I'll put a link to the show notes about it. They took a look at pretty much everything. They took a look at, you know, the Echoes and the Google Assistants and the HomePod, and did a bunch of tests, including, you know, test TV shows to see what. They also tested Harman Kardon's Invoke, which uses, I think, the now dead Microsoft Cortana. And they took a look at, you know, accidental activations. I think that John and I have both experienced this during the podcast where we accidentally activate something. The study says between 1.5 and 19 times a day. I'm leaning towards the 19 times a day accidental activation. I don't know about you, John.
Well, I mean, we've gotten to the point in our house where we literally will just yell out, "Ain't nobody talking to you," when you know, a certain thing rude. Chirps up, you know. Yeah.
They do say that the HomePod from Apple and Cortana devices activates by accident the most. Followed by the Echo Dot Series 2, Google Home Mini, and Echo Dot Series 3. So, you know, presumably other Echo, Amazon Echoes and other Google Home Assistant types have similar things. For me, the Siri is the worst offender. It's always waking up by accident. And my watch is really bad because it's not the voice. It's the when I tap the crown or I bend my wrist to grab something, for example, it'll push the crown in and Siri will activate. That must happen 19 times a day all by itself.
Yeah, that happens to me. It used to happen a lot more. I've started wearing my watch a little farther up my arm than I used to, and it stopped doing it as much. But and I'm talking like, you know, a couple of millimeters, not, yeah, you know, 6 inches above where it used to be. But I also find that it's sort of funny in class. It'll happen occasionally, and I'll be lecturing. And when I look down at my watch as it pipes up, it's got, you know, 3 or 4 lines of random things, some of which I said, some of which I did not. So interesting research and interesting to think about what triggers it and how it gets triggered.
Yeah. The Google Home system, by the way, you know, for me is especially touchy because it seems to only rely on a hard consonant and ooh sound, right? Ooh or O sound. So any hard consonant and a, you know, hard consonant, ooh, O, another hard consonant, ooh, O, will wake it up. So it's almost anything will wake up the Google Home, in my opinion. But yeah, Siri's, also Siri's useless when you do activate it. So I do have a kind of funny story. I can't remember who told me this story, but I think it was during a legislative hearing. And I think some elected official was asking something, and somebody's Siri went off by accident, got activated by accident. And Siri says, "I'm sorry, I don't understand your question." You know? Oh, and there goes Siri. Not
again. Yeah, and you got her to.
Yeah.
And that's got her to say something. Yep.
Yeah.
Interesting, and it will be interesting to also see where we eventually go with these sort of mistaked activations.
Yep.
Or maybe. You know, it does really remind you that you're being listened to all the time, which is sort of creepy.
Right. It's like being a kid again. You know, you're always being listened to. Alrighty. The other thing I wanted to mention from this study is there's a question. Are there specific TV shows that cause more overall activations than others? If so, why? And the researchers report that Gilmore Girls and The Office were responsible for the majority of activations. I didn't really watch either series. I'm not quite sure why it is, but the researchers say these two shows have more dialogue with respect to others, meaning that the number of activations is at least in part related to amount of dialogue. So the more you talk, the more likely you are to activate. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right, John. Well, what have you got?
Well, I have a quick tip of the week, okay. And it's something that we've talked a little bit in the past about. Text expansion software, Text Expander is the most common one that I know of, and there are many others in the space. But a lot of them support what they call fill-in-the-blank snippet extension, which if you've never used it, if you're using a text expander, you know, I think we think about this as, okay, really copy and paste on steroids. So I'm going to take all those things that I usually would have to paste in and just put them as an expansion. And, you know, I'll be using it like that. But a lot of them support fill-ins and scriptable sorts of things where you can easily have a template and then fill in the blanks when you expand it out. And that's something I started using this last week with Markdown quite a bit in the super secret project that I'm working on. Because I'm typically using common Markdown, I guess, abbreviations for image files, which, you know, has a spot for the caption that you want to put in, then the image file name after that. And because the file names that I'm doing have to be very formulaic, they have to have a section number and then a figure number and that sort of thing, I actually just wrote an expansion snippet so that when I hit the little code, I think it's like, you know, IMGR or something like that, it'll pop a little window. I can put my caption right in, then I can do the section, then I can do the figure number. And it is how I was able to caption in about an hour, 87 screenshots on Friday morning.
Wow.
It made it a lot easier than having to write out all of it. I could just do an expansion, type in the caption, type in the number of the file, and then do the next.
Right.
So if you've never played with that, if you do use text expansion software and you've just thought, well, what, I don't really know how I'd use this, go in and at least play around with it. I think you'll find some interesting abilities in being able to customize your snippet between the time you activate it and the time it gets pasted into your document.
Are you using Text Expander itself or something else?
Yep, I pay the, I think it's a once a year fee for Text Expander. You can then sync it to all of your devices. So, but yeah, I've been using Text Expander now for about 2 years or so, okay. Full time.
And this is Mac OS, I assume.
Yes, but they also have a Windows version. So makes it very, because I do have a Windows PC at work,
yeah.
I can use the same text expansion either place. And Text Expander is, let's see, $333 a month if you do an annual plan. So whatever 333 times 12 is your right. yearly cost. So that comes out to about $40.
Okay. And is that good for both platforms, Windows and Mac OS, or just one?
Both platforms. And the iOS version as well.
Hmm.
So you do not have, and I think that's what, and they also have a Chrome version. So yeah, Windows, Chrome, Mac OS, iOS.
That seems pretty handy. Yeah, sure. Now I've got to go see if I, did I get anything? I don't think I've added any apps recently. Let me look real quick. I mean, except for the Office thing. Oh, and I finally, to close up, I guess I should mention that I finally did get the battery grapher working. And it turned out that I had to manually install it on my watch. I thought it would sync up eventually, but that didn't happen. So I had to actually go into the watches store and it recognized that I had paid my $2 or whatever and installed it. And so I am now a satisfied user of the product. In fact, let me go see what it's saying right now. Battery grapher is saying I have accuracy's okay. And I should charge my watch before 9:31 p.m. tomorrow.
I have until 8:01 p.m. tomorrow.
Okay. So. Okay. All righty. So, yeah, very handy app. $2, reasonable price. I'm happy to pay that much. Really not a fan of subscriptions. I know John is less adverse to it than I am. But I've bought a few subscriptions. Anyway, that is it. We did this in under 30 minutes. Although I thought it was going to be 15, so it's still longer than I thought. All righty. Okay, John. So that is it. MobileViews Podcast 319, and we are down. We'll talk to you next time.